Hello and welcome to this episode of Meet the Entrepreneur, brought to you by Invest Africa Insights. In this series, we speak with leading entrepreneurs from across the continent on the business problems they are solving, how they got started, the industry-changing business they've built, and where their companies are heading. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Vivian Walker, founder of MedSAF, a secure pharmaceutical marketplace for emerging markets. Vivian, thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very, very grateful.
So MedSAF is a really fascinating and innovative company, and I'm really pleased to have you on today, not only because of the relevance of what you do to tackling coronavirus, but actually because you've built the company to tackle an often underappreciated issue, the prevalence of fake and substandard medication across the continent, which tragically kills just over 100,000 Africans a year, according to the World Health Organization. And you've done this by creating a verified, secure supply chain platform, which I'm hoping you're going to be able to tell us a bit more about today. So just to kick us off, if we could go back to the beginning when you founded the company back in 2017, and perhaps you can tell us a bit about why you founded MedSAF. What was the nature of the problem that you were looking to solve?
Absolutely. So I was born and raised in the US and actually just came to Nigeria for a business school internship. So I was really supposed to just be there for 3 months, had never been to sub-Saharan Africa before, and I just wanted to kind of get a better understanding. And obviously, I was looking through everything through the business school lens as well. So got there, and in my second month, one of my friends died from taking a fake malaria pill. And I actually never really talk about the story, but it's not even just the fake malaria pill. It's the fact that literally in the back of a car, they had to drive him to hospital and hospital where there were a series of mistakes and inadequacies in the healthcare industry as a whole that caused him to die in the back of a car after his fifth hospital visit that day. You know, so it really just the impact of that experience and just having had entrepreneurial healthcare experience in the US. You know, I helped start home healthcare agencies and we're keeping elderly patients alive. And here is a guy that's in his early 30s that dies in the back of a car. And so it came from this idea, MedSAF came from this idea that this is not fair and that quality medication is a fundamental human right. And so after that, I started to look into the supply chain. I did a series of things to kind of test the understanding of how does someone actually get fake medications or substandard medications, and realize that it's a much bigger, much more complicated issue than I could ever have realized. But that technology can actually leapfrog a lot of the infrastructure and legacy issues that are on ground. And I realized that if I could connect and vet high quality drug manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies directly to the weaker link, which is the hospitals and pharmacies, and give those hospitals and pharmacies a platform that solves a lot of their business issues so that the bar to use MedSAF is low, that we could actually increase the quality of medications dispensed. You know, so MedSAF is a platform to facilitate the movement of medications in complicated supply chains. And our goal is to increase access, affordability, and quality of medications dispensed. And we do that using technology, data analytics, and a controlled ecosystem that's connecting all these stakeholders, but also incentivizing good behavior of all of the players in the supply chain.
Well, such a tragic story. And yeah, clearly a sort of an issue that affects many, many people. So in the process of putting your solution in place around the supply chain, what were the sort of key challenges that you had to overcome? Where were the sort of real issues coming from? Was it with the suppliers? Was it with getting the pharmacies and the hospitals on board? Was it with getting backing, working with the government? What were the sort of key challenges you had to navigate there?
Well, so I think there's people have done this and we have examples of huge mistakes that have been done in this way, which is that you go and you look at an industry and you say, oh, technology is a solution. Okay, here's this nice shiny platform, use it. And that wasn't the case. And so I think one of the from the very beginning, one of the biggest challenges that we wanted to overcome was the fact that in order to build this platform, we actually had to become a distributor. So we had to actually embed ourselves in the industry and feel firsthand the challenges of being a middleman or supplier in this supply chain, and then creating the solutions, crafting the solutions to get everybody on board. And so that was the first kind of, business challenges. Okay, we've got to actually really get our hands dirty in this, and we've got to do it ourselves. Because the state of the industry is very old, so you have a lot of long-term, suppliers who've been supplying the same medications for years. There's no technology. There's no electronic medical records. There's working capital challenges of our hospitals and pharmacies. So everyone has these huge business challenges. And so our goal was to find a way to help both sides of the supply chain and make it easy to work with MedZap. So I'd say, the adoption to MedZap very early on was positive from a pharmaceutical manufacturer's perspective, as well as the hospital and pharmacy perspective, because everyone knew that we needed to do this. It was just how to get it done. And that's what MedZap focused on. From a MedZap specific challenge, I would say the bigger challenge for us was obviously, raising money, enough money for this project, and, just kind of getting investors who are quite outside of the issue on board, because, they didn't necessarily realize that what we're building isn't even really been done in this space, right? In an African context. But, there are steps to this thing, and it's not going to be, overnight that you're going to be able to kind of realize the full potential, So it's kind of been getting the greater community on board. That was a bigger challenge than the industry itself, because, we've been cheered coming into hospitals. I mean, we really give them a lot of benefits. Same with suppliers. So, that's just kind of a roundout about of our challenges.
And you mentioned fundraising there, and I'm quite keen to talk a little bit more about that, because obviously it's a challenge that all entrepreneurs face early on in their careers. So I'm wondering if you could perhaps just tell us a little bit more about your experience of fundraising for MedZap.
Company to build a sustainable company that solves a massive issue. And just to remember, the World Health Organization says that 1 in 10 medications are sold are fake or substandard. But we had to go into the open drug markets. We've seen them with our own eyes. And these are massive markets that service up to 60% of West Africa that are selling medications in an open market. So the idea that fake or substandard medications isn't a much bigger problem is laughable, that it's that people don't realize how huge of an issue this is. And these are the things that we had to go up against. But again, those things aren't necessarily all of the various, barriers to kind of, for scale aren't necessarily understood from people who are not in the industry, right? Because a lot of this stuff is actually underground. They say that the black or gray pharmaceutical market is like 10 times larger than the legal market. So, you've got this kind of black box of information that isn't really easily understood. So, and it's a complicated problem, so getting investors to understand, the depth of this problem, but the ease of this solution has always been, something that we've had to overcome. Also, there are two ways to do this. You can build a sustainable company that is going to last the test of time and has, built a strong foundation to really solve this issue, or you can follow what the investors want and you know, pick a couple of SKUs, purchase them in bulk, and just distribute them and say, oh, I've got revenue, right? And so we chose the first piece. We chose to actually build something that is a powerful engine that can sustain itself and can be built upon in a way that actually really solves this issue. So, you know, compared to our competitors, you can clearly see that. So it's about, you know, what it's about finding the right investors who actually can have appreciation for what you've done and the intensity of what we've done and the impact that we've made. And it also understands, you know, the potential of of these types of companies, because this company is for pharmaceutical industry, but you can actually replicate this for other industries as well in countries like Nigeria, right? But again, it's all about building the foundation first and not trying to just, you know, show the largest growth in the first couple of years. That's the most important thing to investors, though, sometimes. So it's kind of bridging the gap between those two different you know, ideologies about what is a good company to invest in and what does it look like.
So would you say then that sort of part of the challenge is sort of educating investors as to what, you know, the wider industry that you're looking to move into, and then I suppose also finding the right partners for the right project.
Exactly. So there's limited investors in Africa anyways, you know, and so just, you know, trying to find the right investors who care about Africa, you know, there's the pool is very small, and investors are going to tend to go to be way more conservative in an African perspective, even though I feel that the opportunities in Africa are so large, even as bad as, you know, these countries are struggling right now, the opportunities to build something to solve these really complex, hard problems can actually leapfrog and technology and solutions that are in Europe and the US. You know, as the pandemic is happening, my parents are calling me for N95 masks, which I have hundreds of them in my warehouse. And there's news from the US that they're running out of PPE and no one knows who has what. Well, that's exactly what MedSAF does, right? So, you know, you have, you know, a solution that you can build in Africa that can actually impact the world. And that's exactly what MedSAF is trying to achieve.
And you've anticipated my next question, because I was going to ask you, obviously, given the work you're doing in healthcare supply chains, we can't not talk about coronavirus. So perhaps you could tell us a bit more about what MedSAF has been doing in relation to coronavirus. Have you changed anything? Have you launched anything new in relation to sort of to new demands?
Yes. So absolutely. So I think the interesting thing about coronavirus is we've been preparing for coronavirus since we launched in 2017. You know, back then we were going to hospitals with our laptop, showing them how to make orders online, showing them how to use Excel and upload, you know, a list of medications that they want and the quantities. We've been using data analytics to aggregate demand and preempt demand since 2017. We've been using our platform to understand where medications are at any given moment in time since then. And so COVID-19 basically disrupted the existing supply chain here, and created even a further need for what MedSAF has been working on since 2017. So during COVID-19, we were able to scale to new states we had never been before, where people are hearing about us because of the strength of our brand and the work that we do with our hospitals, and are ordering in large bulk from us, and we've never built a relationship with them face to face. Right. And so COVID-19 was just a chance for expansion of what we've always done. We've always sold vaccines. We've always sold masks and consumables and medications. So everything that you need for COVID-19, we've already had it. So it, it, and already had the best solution of how to work with the network of hospitals within our network, right? We've been financing hospitals since 2017. So a hospital that is, you know, a bit cash strapped can still get a higher quality product from us because we have the framework in place for them to, you know, to get those medications. We've been providing quality control as a service since 2017. So when the market started getting flooded with fake masks or used masks or, you know, fake N95s, well, we've always had in our processes the performance of quality control. So we were able to know who the better suppliers are because we vetted them, and we are able to have checks and balances in place to make sure that nothing that we ever pass on, you know, to our customers is damaged or hurts them in any way, especially in a time as serious as COVID-19. So we've got hundreds of pharmaceutical and manufacturer and supplier partnerships that we've built over many years. You know, so this allows us to know in the industry who's got what where, but also who's the best person to work with. And we're just going to continue to move forward through COVID-19. So we never shut down. We were working. And because we are a tech company, majority of all of our processes are online anyways. So we've always had the transparency in our own organization of what's going on. And at this point, it's at its greatest height because of the platform that we've tailored for this industry. So telling our employees to work from home, but continue to work, didn't disrupt our business. If anything, it just made it better because now we have all these Zoom meetings. We have way more Zoom meetings to talk about, you know, issues, whereas we would have talked about them face to face. But, you know, so basically we were prepped for COVID-19 in 2017. And so I think the companies that had the foresight to realize that, look, you know, healthcare might not be the most interesting investment at the time because no one was talking about healthcare. They were talking about fintech, you know, and now everyone's talking about healthcare. But if you're a entrepreneur, you know, do something that you're passionate about that's actually beneficial to humanity, you know, and double down on that. And I've had a laser focus on MedSAF since 2014, actually, when I started researching this thing, you know, and so now everything's kind of paying off as a time of growth and expansion for us. And people are paying attention to a lot of the hard work that we've put in the industry, but then also just the impact that we've created already in one of the worst and hardest environments in the world.
And you mentioned that the challenges that the US is facing and lots of countries globally around the healthcare supply chain. So are you thinking of or moving into a sort of wider space of widening your net? Would your supply chains allow for that? Are they sort of are you looking at mostly international providers? Are you working more closely with local suppliers?
Yeah. So the first phase of MedSAF, which we completed, was becoming the model distributor and understanding the pain points of every stakeholder in the supply chain. In that process, we had to create relationships and create impact for pharmaceutical manufacturers. These pharmaceutical manufacturers are local, and we help them, you know, get their medications across the country, but they're also global, right? So we've been able to create track records with companies that have a presence across Africa, but also across the world. Another thing that we did is start to use the data that we aggregate. So MedSAF in the future will be more of a data company than it would be distribution, because the insights that you can get from the movement of medication can help all healthcare stakeholders increase their offering to the industry. Right. And that could be anything from price sensitivity, understanding brands and brand preferences, demand planning. You know, there's so many benefits that you can get from understanding where medications are moving within a supply chain. And that's where we're headed. But in order to get there, we had to build something for, you know, an industry like this, or for the industry in an environment like a Nigerian environment where it's quite tough. And we're building the technology around the best practices. And so the goal of MedZaf in our phase two, which is what we're in right now, is really building up the supplier network and making sure that we're vetting our suppliers so that we can eventually, you know, license our platform to them and help them reach their medications, reach our hospitals and pharmacy network. This will then allow us to scale across Africa, but then also with continuous improvement of our platform, our SaaS platform, and just the learnings from these various terrains, we can then also continue on into other markets. And I think it's just very interesting to note that this is not an African problem. This is a global problem. It's actually a problem that exists in the US. It's a problem that exists in Central, South America, Asia. It's actually a global problem. And so by understanding the movement of medications in the supply chain, it helps every single person in that supply chain, including patients. It can help them with pricing. It can help them with, you know, quality. It can help them with, you know, just even adherence and just being able to understand more information about the medications. I mean, there's so many use cases. So the point is that, yes, we've always planned to build this company in a Nigerian context, crack this puzzle, and then take it into other markets with our partners. And our partners are very much so interested in the way that our data and our supply chain are the processes of how we get our medications through the supply chain can improve their initiatives as well. And those could be NGOs, they can be pharma companies, they can be governments, various organizations that have the need to know that a medication went from one place all the way down to a patient in another place.
And you mentioned there sort of how complex this issue is and how sort of significant. I mean, I've seen estimates of sort of 30 to 40% of medicines in Nigeria that are falsified or even going higher than that. So it's obviously something that needs a connected approach, I suppose. So I was curious to know a bit more about whether you are working with governments or regulators at the moment and how you're doing that and what you would like to see sort of, in that sort of wider space in terms of regulation progress.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll talk about the wider regulation is that, you know, I would really hope that regulatory body, well, first of all, I mean, there are initiatives for Africa to have, a unified regulatory approach towards the management of medications. And I think that that's amazing, right? I think it's the African Medication or Medicine Agency Treaty. I think that's amazing because, you know, just to have a unified way of everyone doing something opens it up to allowing technologies and improvements to move across Africa where it's most needed. And I think that's crucial. So that's a good thing that's happening on the ground here. The only thing I would hope is that, you know, processes are simple, simplified, fair, and that there's really, you know, opportunities for gathering information about how policy impacts the people on the ground. You know, I won't get too into it, but, you know, back when I started researching this, you know, I think one of the biggest revelations to me was that the overregulation of the pharmaceutical industry is the reason that there's this huge black market. And that was, you know, just kind of mind blowing to me because, you know, sometimes you approach Africa and you think, oh, it's just, you know, it's this lawless space. When in reality, there are many laws, there are a lot of them. And so, and the impact of them doesn't necessarily have the intended outcome. And so as long as there is, you know, just the really understanding of what's the real outcome if I do this, you know, as long as there's that thought process and the engagement with the private sector, because the reality is that, you know, private sector in a country like Nigeria, they're the ones solving the problems on the ground every single day, right? Because when we started the company, we didn't necessarily think that we needed to do logistics, but we had to get into logistics. We had to get into power. We had to get into financing. We had to get into all these other pieces of the ecosystem that we had to get into, because we had to build those things ourselves if we wanted our concept to work, right? So private sector engagement is crucial for any of these policies or regulations to work. And another thing I can say about working with government is a lot of the time, and I'll just be honest, you have to kind of have a large amount of money to work with the government, right? You know, that's just my thesis from being in Nigeria, is that if you know that you've got to kind of have the funds aside to invest in a government project, unless, you know, you're kind of, you know, very well connected at the top. So as an entrepreneur, you know, we have focused on building the business, making sure it's sustainable. We are at the point now to take on further conversations with the government. But the way we work with government today is that we work with government hospitals, you know, so we supply, we've supplied government hospitals, across Nigeria, and that, so we're closer to the ground, than we are at the top.
That's really interesting. And really interesting point about, regulation. So do you think then that actually, part of the problem is when there's too much regulation, it's too much of a barrier to entry and for a legitimate company. And so then you end up with sort of shortcuts being taken. Is that, yeah.
Got it. Ding, ding, ding.
I just have a couple more questions for you, Vivian. Just one, looking back on your time as a building MedSAF, and one looking forward. So the first is just for our listeners, many of whom are sort of, you know, early on in this process themselves. If you were looking back when you started, what advice would you give yourself? Is there something that you wish you had known earlier on?
Yeah, I mean, if I were looking back, I mean, to relax.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I was too hyped up. I was too obsessive with this company, you know, to the point where, you know, everything in my personal life has suffered greatly. Right. So now I've, you know, this year, especially, I think this great reset of life, that COVID has also brought, you know, has allowed me to create a sense of balance and realize, wow, I could have been much more relaxed last year if I had done these things or that, you know, and I could have enjoyed the journey more, because I've done some really amazing things. I've gotten to do some really cool things with MedSAF around the world. And you know, I don't think there's anyone that's ever just seen me like relax and having a good time ever at any of the things I've done, or, you know, just even when we've had victories in MedSAF, you know, in the market, or we won this big account, or we fixed this problem, you know, it's always like, okay, what's next? Now we've got to do this, and that, you know? So I would just say, you know, relax a little bit and just trust that you know what you're doing, because I have been proven right about everything I said I was going to do in 2016. But sometimes along the journey, you just stop, you don't trust yourself and you second guess and, you know, you wonder. I just wish I had been way more relaxed.
That's a good piece of advice. Definitely to enjoy the ride a little bit. And my last question for you is looking to the future. We've sort of touched on it a bit as we've been talking, but sort of what's next for MedSAF? What's the next big plan or big change that you're looking at?
Well, definitely, you know, getting into other African countries with this platform, as its full realized platform, as the fully realized platform. So that will be a really cool phase of MedSAF coming up in the short term. But, you know, the future of MedSAF is all about being the engine behind pharmaceutical, you know, supply chain related platforms around the world. And that's the fully realized vision. Like when that starts to happen, I can take a deep breath. Until then, I'm just working away at it.
And out of curiosity, which are the new markets that you're looking to move into next? At the moment, you're in Nigeria. Are you anywhere else at the moment?
Yeah, so we went deep into Nigeria. We're in 6 states in Nigeria because we wanted to make sure that we've, you know, really kind of created, you know, a model that can really help other countries as well, and that we've done this thing the right way. And now the next phase of MedSAF is all about languages, if that makes sense to you, because here we are, we've got this platform that can influence supply chain players to do things in ways that are improving the quality of medications and services that they provide, whether that's to patients or if it's to, you know, hospitals and pharmacies. So the next phase of MedSAF is moving into Francophone Africa, Ivory Coast, Senegal, but then also into East Africa as well, Kenya, and starting to really kind of get the next phase of MedSAF technology and influence and branding in place, which is all about, you know, that influence of medications and which ones you should be purchasing, and just understanding insights about the needs of the market and using it to improve the offerings on the platform itself. So that's the next phase of MedSAF. And we're definitely just looking for the right people to help us realize this entire vision.
Vivian, thanks so much for coming on the show today and talking to me. It's a really fascinating company that you're still building, and very much look forward to seeing where you go next. If people want to follow you or catch up with MedSAF, they can do that at www.medsaf.com. And you're also on LinkedIn as MedSAF, and on Twitter, and your handle is at MedSAFcom. So I hope I've got all that right. And if people want to learn more about what you do, they can find you there. Thanks everyone for listening. And as always, don't forget to share and subscribe.
Thank you.